Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what does the Tashlich ritual consist of, and what does it symbolize? This week we celebrate Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. So to celebrate, we've decided to read you a selection from the memoir Burning Lights by Bella Chagall. Bella Rosenfeld was born in 1895 in Vitebsk in Belarus into a wealthy Hasidic family. She met Marc Chagall in 1909 and, as he tells it, it was love at first sight. They married in 1915 and subsequently lived in Petrograd, Lithuania, Germany, and Paris. In 1941, they fled to the United States, where Bella died 3 years later from a viral infection. Burning Lights, her memoir of shtetl life, was originally written in Yiddish. It was published in 1946 in English by Marc Chagall, who also illustrated it. This excerpt was taken from the book Celebrating the Jewish Holidays, which is a collection of writings edited by Stephen J. Rubin and published by Brandeis University Press in 2003. The days of awe have come, and our whole house is in an uproar. Each holiday brings with it its own savor. Each is steeped in its own atmosphere. A clear, joyful, purified air as after a rain. This is the air of Rosh Hashanah. After the dark nights of the Selichot prayers, a bright sunny day dawns for the new year. The week of Selichot is the most restless week. Father wakes up in the middle of the night, rouses my brothers, and all of them dress quietly and go off like thieves slinking through the door. What are they looking for in the cold and the dark streets? It's so warm in bed. And what if they don't come back at all? How mother and I would weep and weep. I'm almost beginning to cry even now, and I wrap myself closer in my blankets. In the morning, when father drinks his tea, his face is pale and tired, but the bustle of the holiday eve dispels everyone's weariness. The shop is closed at an early hour. Everybody makes ready to go to shul, to synagogue. There are more preparations than ever before, as if it were the first time they were going there. Everyone puts on something new, perhaps a fresh, light-colored hat, a new necktie, or another new garment. Mother dons a white silken blouse. She seems rejuvenated. She has a new soul, and she's eager to go to shul. One of my elder brothers opens the thick prayer book for her and creases down the pages from which she must pray. They're marked with notations made by grandfather's hand many years ago. Say this. Mother recognizes the lines over which she wept last year. A trembling comes over her, and her eyes dim with tears. She's in a hurry to go to shul to weep over the words, as if she were reading them for the first time. A stack of books has been prepared for her. She wraps them in a large kerchief and takes them all with her. Must she not pray for a good year for the whole family? As for father's books and talis, the shamus, the sexton, came to take them to the shul during the day. I remain behind alone. The house is empty, and I too feel emptied. The old year, like something forlorn, drags itself away somewhere outside. The coming year must be a clear one, a bright one. I want to sleep through the night as quickly as possible. On the following day in the morning, I too go to shul. I too wear new clothes from top to bottom. The sun is shining, the air is clear and alive. My new shoes make a dry tapping sound. I walk faster. The new year must have already arrived in shul. The shofar must be sounding there. Even now it echoes in my ears. I imagine that the sky itself has come down lower and hurries to shul together with me. I run to the women's section. I push open the door. A whiff of heat comes from in there as if from an oven. The heavy air stifles my breath. The shul is packed full. The high lecterns are piled with books. Old women sit bent, sunk in their chairs. Girls stand almost on the heads of the grandmothers. Children tumble underfoot. I want to elbow my way to Mother, but she's sitting so far off, all the way up at the front, next to the window that opens into the men's section. As soon as I try to move, a woman turns around to me. A weeping face gives me an angry look. Oh, oh! She breathes wrath at me. I'm pushed from behind. I'm suddenly freed and thrown to the handrail. My mother signals to me with her eyes. She's glad that I'm near her. But where's the shofar? Where is the New Year? I look at the walls of the men's section. The Ark of the Torah is closed, its curtains drawn. Silently and calmly, the two embroidered lions guard it. The congregation is in a tumult, as though busy with something else. Have I come too early or too late? Suddenly, from under a talus, a hand holding a shofar stretches out and remains suspended in the air. The shofar blares out. Everyone is awakened. They are very still. They wait. The shofar gives another blast. The sound is chopped off as though the horn were out of breath. People exchange glances. The shofar trumpets hoarsely. A murmur ripples through the shul. What manner of shofar blowing is that? He lacks strength. Perhaps another man should be called up. And then suddenly, as though the trumpet blower had pushed out the evil spirit that was clogging the shofar, there comes a pure, long sound. Like a summons, it runs through the whole shul, sounding into every corner. The congregation is relieved. One gives a sigh, another nods his head. The sound rises upward. The walls are touched by it. It reaches me in my handrail. It throbs up to the ceiling, pushes the thick air, fills every empty space. It booms into my ears, my mouth. I even feel an ache in my stomach. When will the shofar finish trumpeting? What does the New Year want of us? I recall my sins. God knows what will happen to me. So much has accumulated during the year. I can hardly wait for the afternoon. I'm eager to go with Mother to the rite of Tashlich to shake off all my sins, cast them into our big river. Other women and men are on their way. All of them walk down the little street that leads to the riverbank. All of them are dressed in black. They could be going, God forbid, to a funeral. The air is sharp. From the high riverbank, from the big city park, a wind is blowing. Leaves are falling, yellow, red-yellow, like butterflies. They whirl in the air, turn over, scatter on the ground. Do our sins fly in the same way? The leaves rustle, stick to my shoes. I drag them along. Having them, it's less fearsome to go through the Tashlich. Why do you stop all the time, says Mother, pulling me by the hand. Let the leaves alone. Soon everyone stops. The street seems suddenly to end. The deep, cool waters seem to be flowing up to our feet. On the river bank, dark clusters of people have gathered. The men, with their heads thrust out and their beards swaying, bend down to the water as if they wanted to see the very bottom. Suddenly, they turn their pockets inside out. Little crumbs and scraps detach themselves from the linings. They recite a prayer aloud and throw their crumbs together with the sins into the water. But how shall I shake off my sins? I have no crumbs in my pockets. I do not even have pockets. I stand next to Mother, shivering from the cold wind that lifts our skirts. Mother tells me the ritual words that I have to say, and the prayers, together with the sins, fall from my mouth straight into the water. I imagine that the river is swollen with all our sins, and it rolls along with its waters suddenly turned black. My burden eased away, I return home. Mother at once sits down to read Psalms. She wants still to make use of the day to obtain something more from God. A humming fills the dark room. The air becomes clouded like Mother's spectacles. Mother is weeping, silently shaking her head. What shall I do? I imagine that from the closely printed lines of the Psalms, our grandfathers and grandmothers come gently out to us. Their shadows sway. They draw themselves out like threads and circle me. I'm afraid to turn around. Perhaps someone is standing at my back and wants to seize me in his arms. Mother! I cannot contain myself. I shake her by the sleeve. She raises her head, blows her nose, and stops weeping. She kisses the psalm book and closes it. Bashka, she says, I'm going to shul. We'll be back soon, all of us. Will you set the table, my child? Mother, is it for the Shecheyanu blessing, I ask? As she goes out, I open the cupboards. I drag out the tall paper bags filled with fruit and spread all of it out on the table. As in a great garden, thick green melons roll on the table. Beside them lie clusters of grapes, white and red. Big, juicy pears have turned over on their little heads. There are sweet apples that have a golden gleam. They look as if they had been dipped in honey. Plums, dark red, scatter all over the table. Over what shall we offer the benediction of first fruits? Haven't we eaten all of these things all year long? I notice that from another bag there protrudes, like a fir tree, a pineapple, a new, unfamiliar fruit. Sasha, do you know where pineapples grow, I ask? Who knows? She spreads her hands. I've got other things to think about. No one knows where the pineapple comes from. With its scaly skin, it looks like a strange fish. But its tail stands up at the top like an open fan. I touch its stuffed belly, and it trembles from top to bottom. It's not a casual manner to touch the pineapple. It behaves somewhat like an emperor. I reserve the center of the table for it. Sasha slices it pitilessly. The pineapple groans under her sharp knife like a live fish. Its juice, like white blood, trickles onto my fingers. I lick them. It is a tart, sweet taste. Is this the taste of the new year, I wonder? Dear God, I whisper hurriedly, before they all come back from shul, give a thought to us. Father and mother pray to you all day long in shul to grant them a good year. And father always thinks of you, and mother remembers your name at every step. You know how toil-worn they are, how care-ridden. Dear God, you can do everything. Make it so that we have a sweet, good year. I quickly sprinkle powdered sugar on the pineapple. Gut Yontif, happy holiday, my brothers run in, trying to outshout one another. They're followed immediately by father and mother, who look pale and tired. May you be inscribed for a happy year, they say. My heart leaps up. I imagine that God himself is speaking through their mouths.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our story, and all of us here at Radio Sefarad wish all of you, Shana Tova, a sweet and happy new year. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is englishcorner@radiosefarad.com. See you next week.